Republicans in Washington, D.C. are pushing for a massive tax overhaul, but a Wisconsin senator may be standing in the way. The Democratic field in the governor's race has gotten even more crowded. We look at who's the latest to enter the race. Former Sheriff David Clark may be gone, but we're still learning about how much it cost to guard his house while he was still in office. All that, plus winners and losers, and your questions, today on JS on Politics. Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Mary Spacuzza. I spoke earlier with Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert about the latest effort in D.C. to push a massive Republican overhaul. This one is about taxes. Here's what he had to say. Now I'm joined by Craig Gilbert, our Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
So there's been some news in the Republican tax overhaul effort. How is that going?
Well, the House is expected today, Thursday, to pass its bill along party lines. The Senate has a very different version, and there's the issue of reconciling the two, but there's also the issue of just getting a bill through the Senate. We've already had one big-name defection on the Senate side. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin has come out critical of both the House bill and the Senate bill and said he won't vote for the Senate bill as it's written. Which is an interesting development, but it also only leaves the Republicans with very little margin for error because they can only afford to lose two senators to pass their plan along party lines.
And he's the first Republican senator to come out against the bill.
And it's interesting on a couple of levels because, A, he did something similar on health care where he, I think, again, in an effort to gain some leverage over the final product, he expressed his dismay / reservations pretty early and ended up voting for a version of the health care bill. But in this case, I think he's trying to exert some influence, and he also has a particular concern that may or may not be hard to meet. I mean, it has to do with the difference between the way corporations will be treated when they get their big tax cut and the way other kinds of businesses, including a lot of small businesses, will be treated because they pay their taxes through the income tax code, and has a real problem with that.
And he came from a business background in Oshkosh, so he probably wants to speak up for the business.
Yeah, and it sounds like the kind of issue he's kind of dug in on, but whether it's an issue that can be solved is another question.
So obviously Paul Ryan has been a big backer of the tax overhaul.
Right.
Ron Johnson now might be an obstacle to that. Do you think Ryan's calling Ron Johnson a lot these days?
He may be, but it didn't, you know, this again, the same dynamics existed during the healthcare debate with the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare. Ron Johnson was not shy about criticizing versions of the bill as it went through the House under Paul Ryan. So, he's been that kind of player on this issue, regardless of the relationships among Wisconsin Republicans. I mean, it's a difficult issue. The math is difficult. The politics is difficult. The geography is difficult within the Republican Party because it affects different kinds of states in very different ways. And so whatever they pass, you know, there's going to be controversy. People will be polarized over it. But if they don't pass anything, it kind of fuels this notion, this frustration that's out there among voters of different stripes that Congress can't get anything done.
No, and it's controlled by Republicans
exactly.
With a Republican president, and what have they actually been able to accomplish when it comes to major
exactly.
policy.
Exactly.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time.
All right.
Really appreciate it, and we'll be looking forward to the votes.
Great.
We've already been talking about the crowded field in the Democratic race when it comes to governor, wanting to be governor. I spoke with Jason Stein about the latest to get in the race and some of the criticism that candidates are facing. Here's what he had to say. I'm joined by Jason Stein from our Madison Bureau. Jason, we've been covering the governor's race, and obviously it's been pretty crowded on the Democratic side. It's gotten even more crowded since we last talked. Who all is in now?
Well, the latest entry earlier this week was Malin Mitchell. So he's a firefighter from Madison, the president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin Union, and a former candidate for lieutenant governor. In 2012, he ran unsuccessfully against Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish in the recall election.
And obviously, there might even be more people getting in the race. What are the effects of having such a crowded field of candidates or potential candidates in a race like this?
Sure. Well, let's run them down. I mean, it's a total, we're almost getting to 2015-16 GOP presidential primary levels here in terms of candidates. I mean, we have Malin Mitchell, we have former Democratic Party Chairman Michael Flynn, State Assemblyman Dana Walks, State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, State School Superintendent Tony Evers, and Madison activist Mike McCabe, to name just some of the candidates and more potential ones. And I do think that has a potential impact on the race if a lot of these candidates stay in. I mean, one thing that you could look for is to see a lot of debate, a lot of proposals, perhaps things that might get more Democratic ideas into the media, into news coverage, and that might be helpful for Democrats. But it's also potentially going to play out in strange ways. If you have this many candidates on the ballot, it really would not take that large a share of the vote to walk away with the Democratic nomination for governor. So, I mean, it would be possible with somebody with just perhaps a political base among, people in Milwaukee or in Madison or among unions to walk away with the nomination when normally it would take a much broader coalition of support. So that's something to watch over the next year.
And they could obviously spend a lot of money kind of trying to win that nomination and then go up against Governor Scott Walker, who tends to have a pretty stocked war chest when it comes to campaign funds. So I'm guessing you want to have some money in the bank to go into the general election on that one.
I think that's a big, drawback or challenge for Democrats, because whoever wins that primary probably will come out of the August vote with very little money left and will have to rapidly replenish with the November election coming up.
And Tony Evers has been facing some criticism from Republicans recently over his decision to not fire a teacher that had gotten into some trouble. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right. So this was a decision not to revoke the license of this teacher who had been, found to be looking at nude images of women during school hours on school computer, but while no students were present. And Republicans have made this a very big issue in the campaign, at least against Tony Evers, attacking him on this. And so what I've been looking at is Evers has argued that he got the law changed so people that do this in the future will have their licenses revoked, but that he really did not have the legal authority to do it at the time. And so what I've done is kind of look through the case law and tried to shake out how true was that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we look forward to your story. Thank you so much, Jason Stein in Madison. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mary.
I'm joined by Bill Glauber and Dan Weiss, both with the Journal Sentinel. We're going to talk about our former sheriff, David Clark. No longer sheriff, but we're still learning about costs associated with his time in office.
We found out just not too long ago that the county provides round-the-clock security for Sheriff Clark's house while he was in office. Mm-hmm. And they gave us a partial number a couple months ago on how much that cost, and I got the final numbers today. And it shows that for a little over a year, maybe close to a year and a half, it cost taxpayers $450,000 to provide security at his house. The new sheriff, acting sheriff, Richard Smith, ended that practice in a cost-cutting move. But the figures, I guess, they're higher than what we'd expected. People had been guessing $300,000 to $400,000, but $450,000 is how much it came to. He started it around June or July of 2016, and it continued up until August of this year. But they also, for a short period in 2015, it turns out, provided security at his house. So basically, someone just sat there the whole time to make sure nothing happened. I went out there a couple weeks ago, sat there for a few hours, and deputies swung by his house then. So even though they might not be doing around-the-clock security detail, they are stopping by to make sure things are that nothing is going on there.
And this is still the former sheriff, not the current sheriff.
Sheriff Clark's house, yeah, right. That they're continuing to do that. So
he's no longer in town anymore.
Yeah, he's got an apartment in the D.C. area. He's spending most of his time there. He says he's traveling more today than he ever has before. In addition to working for America First Super PAC, he's also working for two think tanks, and he's set up a new business called DAC Enterprises. He's out there most of the time. I'm assuming his wife is still here at the house, so that's what I'm assuming they're checking.
And he gave an interview on radio, or he was on a radio talk show, and he said, "I've moved on." Well, maybe he's moved on, but the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department hasn't. The acting sheriff has been frantically trying to cut a $5 million budget deficit. There's still problems at the jail. Basically, he's left a hot mess behind.
You're writing something about the jail? So
I'll be writing about the jail monitor later this week, and you know his role over the last decade and a half.
And what was the reason he gave for the needing security?
He said that he gave no explanation as to why he was doing it. But the reason that they gave was that he had received some threats, and they gave us a few of the threats. And, you know, they were serious, some of them racial, but we only know of one incident in which someone went to his house and ended up being arrested, and that was a reporter for a Chicago TV station who was trying to get comment from him, and that guy eventually was charged and paid a fine, but I'm not aware of any other instance in which people went out there and did something at his house. It does coincide with his decision to start traveling a whole lot more on behalf of Trump in 2016, and his travels on the conservative lecture circuit as well. So, that's what it matches with.
Interesting, because he was traveling all over the country at that time as a Trump surrogate.
He basically wasn't here in October and in September, but he started around May is when he started hitting the road, going around. But toward the end of the campaign, he was traveling with the same super PAC he's working with now, and they flew him. He had events, as many as 8 or 9 events in a day.
And $450,000 is obviously a lot of money. Is that final tally now? There won't be any more, presumably?
It is. It's the cost of paying for 3 deputies sitting out there for 8 hours a day.
Okay.
So.
Got it. All right. Well, thank you. We are up now for everybody's favorite winners and losers.
What's our least favorite part of this? We know that's our favorite. So
your favorite part is the losers. So maybe
the losers is my favorite. Yeah,
right,
winners are not so good.
Yeah, but you did find a winner this week. So why don't you go first?
You've already talked about it, Malin Mitchell. He's now the 9th Democrat to get in the race. I'd been saying 8 is enough, but now we're up to 9. And we're still waiting on Paul Soglin and who else? Anybody else?
Are we going to get cheaper by the dozen?
Cheaper by the dozen would be good. Yeah. What do we do with 10 if 10 get in?
I don't know.
And we could say 9 is fine, but I don't know.
We'll have to work on that.
But Malin getting in. You know what happens now, though? Once they're all in, the scrutiny starts kicking in, and we start looking at each of their records. We've already started doing that with some of the candidates. But, that's... That's the part that they don't like in the campaign. So,
and no one has gotten traction. Nobody.
Yeah, I mean,
there obviously has not been a candidate that has cleared the field and made everybody else.
No, and people look at the field and get in the race. People not even thinking about running get in the race after seeing that.
You're not announcing, are you?
I'm not.
Okay. What about your loser?
It's Brad Schimmel, who, while we're up here freezing and dealing with the weather, we find out down in Florida. Having dinner with other Republican attorneys general, at Mar-a-Lago, and where was it? Where were they staying?
I believe they were at the Breakers, which is quite a place, also.
Yeah. So, that news came out yesterday.
And I think there was mention of the word catamaran.
Yeah, catamarans being used.
Golf.
Everything. Wow. Yeah. And not things you're doing right now in Wisconsin.
And is this a taxpayer-funded trip or a private campaign trip? Do we know?
This is the Republican attorney general's.
Okay. Yeah, it's the Republican. But that could be paid for by taxpayers.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I won't go there on that.
I didn't write the story. Patrick did.
Okay.
We can double-check on that.
Got it. All right. What about you, Bill? Who's your winner?
Well, a woman named Wendy Sherman, who most people have never heard of, was a former Undersecretary of State in the State Department under the most previous administration, Barack Obama. She has negotiated the nuclear deal with Iran, and she has previously negotiated with the previous leader of North Korea. She came to Milwaukee to discuss her views on the North Korean nuclear threat, said that there should be a comprehensive policy. She is a voice in the wilderness, but I give her credit for getting out there, speaking to what she believes should happen, speaking to the seriousness of the issue. She has her critics, but I think she really needs to be listened to, especially at this time regarding North Korea.
Okay. So what about your loser?
Oh boy, there's many. Let's. I mean, we can start with Roy Moore, obviously, the Alabama former Supreme Court judge. He can't take a hint to get out. I mean, I've never
seen.
Well,
that's because he could still win.
He could still win, but the National Republican Senatorial Committee, they're leaking polls showing him behind. That's unheard of. Usually they leak polls to show you're either ahead or within fighting range. They mm-hmm. they have a poll showing that 12 points out behind, which would be a complete wipeout and a monstrous upset.
And who knows how many other people might come forward.
So. Yeah,
were there two more yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, you just don't know. And then, you know, adding to Roy Moore, we learned this morning of the groping allegations against Minnesota Senator Al Franken. He apologized for it. But, you know, clearly, and he's going to probably face a Senate ethics investigation.
Well, he's asked for one now.
Yeah, he's now asked for one. Okay, because people are asking for one on him. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's not a good moment, good look for the Senate. And then you have, of course, today, New Jersey Senator, I think just moments ago, Bob Menendez. There's a hung jury in his corruption trial. So, hey, he gets to go back to the Senate with a hung jury.
Until they decide whether to go through the whole thing.
Yeah, so this is not, this is a pretty dreadful political time. And the Senate, which you can't think can go any lower in the public's esteem, is probably going to go lower. And, you know, they've brought this on themselves.
And there's the potential for more people in Congress to be identified, because there was a testimony this week that they had paid how much?
$15 million to settle some of these sexual harassment.
But we don't know the names of the people who were involved in these matters, so those still could come out as well.
It's stunning. I mean, it truly is stunning in terms of it's 2017. These matters, these things that never should have happened, the fact that they're happening in real time or, you know, close to real time, just shows you how out of touch some people are, you know, those who are allegedly committing these acts, and how far behind the times the Senate is.
Yeah.
Roy Moore, I think, tweeted, was it last night, like, Mitch McConnell, bring it on. Does not seem like he is taking steps to get out of the race at this point.
He seems pretty defiant, seems to be going to stay in. Of course, you know, they haven't elected a Democratic senator down there for a very long time. Basically, the old Democratic Party down there, you know, is now the Republican Party has replaced it.
So did you see what his wife did? She posted on Facebook this letter from 50 pastors supporting him, but it turned out the letter was from like May.
From before all of this,
and
yeah.
And so several of them start calling in and saying, yeah, we don't want to be on the list anymore. So.
Right.
What's happened in this country over the last basically month and a half in light of the Weinstein revelations that the New York Times printed up.
There's also now the Bill O'Reilly stuff.
The Bill O'Reilly, right. And now this is truly, you know, it's cultural changing, and that's what we're witnessing, a culture changing on the fly.
All right. Well, we're going to take some viewer questions. We've got some time. So I think the first one we're going to send to you, Bill, first. This is from Jason, who said, do you think Ron Johnson gave a heads up to Paul Ryan before he publicly denounced the tax plan? Wouldn't that be a courtesy he could have done? Do you think Ron Johnson will come around? What do you think?
Well, we've all interviewed Ron Johnson, and he generally says what's on his mind at that moment. I don't think he gave, I would doubt he gave a heads up to Paul Ryan. I know that he has expressed concerns. His problem with the bill is that it deals better with corporations, gives them a lower tax rate than with so-called pass-throughs. He wants that to be balanced. He has said that now for weeks, if not months. So I think he just reached a point where, okay, I'm against it. But, you know, there's a long time to go.
And I think he also was not happy that he wasn't included in the process to put this bill together. At least that's what he told the Wall Street Journal.
Obviously, Paul Ryan's been pushing for this for a while. He feels that he's been saying now is the time, as Republicans have lost seats, that he feels like this.
Well, they've also had so many defeats. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they control the government and they can't get anything done, I mean, not anything, but not so much.
Not major policy overall.
Right. So, I mean, this is their big issue now that they need to get through.
It's a tax bill unlike any other major, quote-unquote, tax reform. Never been done this rushed. This on the fly.
So why is it rushed? I mean, they have been talking about tax reform forever. Is it like the healthcare thing where they were talking about the Obamacare forever, but no one had worked out the details?
Well, you have to work out the numbers. And in this case, they're blowing a hole through the budget, $1.5 trillion. But they're still having trouble working out the numbers. And this is, as far as I can tell, this is the first tax bill of my time that actively appears to hurt individual taxpayers to pay for. I mean, I don't want to sound like a partisan, but it actually goes out, hurts individual taxpayers
to
pay for tax cuts for others. It's pretty astonishing.
I'm sure a lot of people in Congress are looking at the elections coming up nearby and thinking that some Republicans might lose seats, and they probably don't want to be one of those Republicans losing their seat and getting blowback.
Do you think Republicans just assumed that they were all talking about the same thing? Because they were all talking about tax reform, and now that it's gotten there, they don't agree on the details. Do you think it's like Obamacare, repeal and replace? That's pretty easy to do, but then it turns out it's not easy to do. Do you think?
It could be. I mean, you know, just based on the corporate tax rate, I think that the area, the number that they could have come to that they would have gotten probably more agreement on, even with some Democrats, would be a 28% tax rate. They're trying to take it all the way down to 20%, which, you know, initially when Trump said 20%, they said, no, I mean, but now they're going for 20% and trying to make it permanent. And then that creates problems. You have to fill in behind it. So you have to hurt someone else in this case. And now they're talking about doing away with the individual mandate on Obamacare. This is the Senate version, and that would come up with hundreds of billions of dollars, but it would also result in 13 million fewer people having health insurance. This is not easy. The last tax overhaul in 1986, rather, I believe took at least 2 years to put together. Here they're trying to do it inside the first year, and really they're rushing it through at the end. It's quite extraordinary to watch. Clearly a party that, you know, has complete power but hasn't been able to wield it in an advantageous way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The next question comes from Amanda, who says, now that Roy Moore is condemned by just about everyone, including the media, when is the media going to condemn the actions of Bill Clinton? Now this morning, Al Franken. Will any of you join us and speak negatively of Bill Clinton and Al Franken? Mary, I thought you could go first. So I guess I will go first.
Who is us, by the way?
I know. I'm guessing this is maybe from a Republican or a conservative. So, gosh, there's a lot to unpack in that. I would say, you know, it's odd when somebody tries to defend, I mean, there are allegations of pedophilia and preying on young girls as young as 14 years old who obviously cannot consent, not in Alabama, not anywhere. So it's sometimes disturbing when somebody tries to say, well, Roy Moore may have been assaulting 14-year-old girls, but Bill Clinton was bad too. So, I mean, I think that anybody, what did Ivanka Trump say? There's a special place in hell for people who prey on children. I would agree with that comment. I do think that, obviously, you know, Bill Clinton or Al Franken, the new groping allegations, those are obviously concerning and unacceptable, too. And, you know, there's a special place in hell for people who prey on children, but there's also a special place in hell for people who use their power to abuse women or other people. So
I don't think Bill Clinton could get elected today.
Given the allegations against him and all of the... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I tend to look at them one at a time, mm-hmm. not a compare contrast. And what you're dealing with now are the present, Moore and Franken. In the past, Clinton, I mean, especially with an intern, obviously today, even then, or at least today, especially a fireable offense. I don't know about, you know, the climate of the 1990s. That's 20 years ago.
I think you can make a case that his situation empowered people to harass others because, the situation with Monica Lewinsky's certainly a difference in the power structure. And
right, she wasn't a minor, but she was clearly in a position. He was in a position of power.
Right, and a number of people just blew off the allegations from the other women. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could do that today. And so, I think, that people operating with people who thought that was okay or irrelevant, mm-hmm. As you said, the culture's changing, and you couldn't do that.
And this is not obviously a problem that is only in one party. We've seen Democrats who have groped women or abused children. We've seen Republicans. So it's not like it's just a Republican problem.
Yeah, obviously Harvey Weinstein's a big, big Republican backer. And
Democratic backer.
Yeah. And Clinton supporter. So, yeah, I mean, that's where it all started.
Right.
It's rare when you have, I mentioned earlier, this big cultural change, but we're viewing this and seeing this in real time, and the country is going to be different after this as a result of all these incidents that have come to light.
And I think there'll probably be other people who are disqualified from being able to run the next time for president because of things that they've done in the past. So it doesn't stop anytime soon.
And I think the whole Me Too movement has also kind of brought to light the issue that just because a woman doesn't speak up right away and that it could be years or even a couple decades before this passes.
Well, in the Kevin Spacey investigation, there were a few people who stepped forward, but the investigation by the English theater where he worked turns up 20 people who said that he was abusive toward them. So, yeah, just because people don't speak out initially doesn't mean that they're not going to speak out eventually.
Or it doesn't mean that they're not telling the truth, right? All right, we've got another one. This one is from John Casper. Hi, John. Who said,
"Hi, John." Mm-hmm.
Hello. Tax breaks for elites never grow the economy. They don't spend them. Bring back the holiday on both sides of the payroll, FICA tax. The 99% will spend that. The lower the income, the higher the marginal propensity to consume. Bill, do you want to weigh in on that one?
The last time they did this was, I think, in the midst of the Great Recession, and the economy at that point really needed a jolt. But you don't want to necessarily monkey around too much with the payroll tax because it funds Medicare, Social Security.
Things
that need money. And so, I think the real question is, does the economy need this infusion of cash to grow? And, do you want to go into deficit to do that? I think that's the real question. Republicans want to usually do it through tax cuts. Democrats usually want to do it through some sort of public spending. So I think with the payroll tax, that's just one you don't necessarily want to get your hands on all the time because down the line it will create massive problems.
All right. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for joining us. We won't be here next week because it's Thanksgiving, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. So please join us.